Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 17 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levitstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. On today's show, we discuss continuity versus restarts. Do comics need to be refreshed every now and then, or should we respect the history no matter how long? On today's show, we discuss continuity versus restarts. Do comics need to be refreshed every now and then, or should we respect the history no matter how long? Matt Summer and Chris Chavez, a.k.a. Equinox, join in to discuss the issue and to please Braxton. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levitstein, and welcome to episode 17 of Comic Timing. We're getting closer and closer to that big 2-0. And for episode 17, we are joined, as always, by the guy who's been up for 2 minutes. He is Matt S.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. What's going on, man?
Not too much, and that is literally the truth. It's 9:35 p.m. right now, and I have been asleep for the last 2 hours, and I just woke up.
Congratulations, man. See, he wakes up for podcasting. That just says something right there. That's devotion right there.
Only for you, Ian.
We are also joined today by, as per request, that's right, Braxton, you can be quiet now about this. Finally, we have on the show Equinox of the Comic Geek Speak Forums, known to everybody outside of the internet as Chris Chavez.
Chris, what's going on? Chris, there you go.
Chris. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, I'm well. How about you guys?
I'm doing really well.
Yeah, doing okay, my friend. There you go.
Excellent. Now, the reason why we have you on is a while back, and I mean a while back, like right when we pretty much posted for suggestions, you posted on the forums an idea that, quite frankly, I couldn't really pass up having an episode about, and that's pretty much character reboots versus continuity, and this was your actual post that I'm going to be reading for you right now. Do you think the comics need to heed to past continuity as new stories are written, or do you think that various series can benefit from a reboot now and then? The reboot could be a total rewriting of past history, as was done with John Byrne's run on Superman, or it could be a changing of the guard, as it has been with The Flash or The Atom. Is keeping true to everything that came before it worthwhile, or would it be overly cumbersome for characters like Captain America or the Fantastic Four? Also, does anyone else find everything you knew about this character is wrong storylines are cop-outs for writers who can't come up with the creative ideas for various books? And that's certainly a couple of great questions right there. So I'm actually going to start it off with you, Chris. I mean, what is your idea on character reboots versus continuity?
You know what? I'm one of those guys. I mean, I got into comics like way, way, way back in the day. The first comic I remember ever seeing was like Swamp Thing number 6 from the series that started out in 72. And I was in the middle of a freaking barbershop, and fortunately they had a stack of books there to keep me entertained. So I mean, I've been reading it for quite a while. To be honest, I actually think having a reboot every now and then actually is a good thing. You can have characters that are going to be iconic no matter what. I mean, in today's day and age where the comic companies are making almost more money, or if not more money, off of marketing and licensing, and movies, what have you, they can only do so much to change the characters and still keep them recognizable. But I think having a reboot every once in a while, it opens things up, allows writers to maybe play things from a different angle, and also makes things more accessible for new readers. Superman, he's been around, for 50 plus years, and I think that with a reboot, kind of like the Byrne did back in the 80s, I think that just opened things up for everybody to jump on in.
Well, reboots every now and then, I mean, speaking from the eye of the reader, I mean, a lot of reboots have actually gotten me to pick up titles, so sometimes they can benefit a character, and every now and then you get one really, really bad one that just really does not work.
Yeah.
Cough, cough, Punisher as a demon, cough, cough, but that's the sort of thing that we hope just goes out of our memory, and we just forget that for a while. Matt, how about you? What is your take on the character reboots versus continuity?
Well, I got to be honest, because I first started collecting comics in the mid-80s, and my first big superhero love were the X-Men, and my first issue was like 182 or something like that. And
yeah,
part of being a comic book nerd and part of the draw is the whole soap opera aspect of characters. You know, you want to know what's going to happen next. I remember my big thing was that I loved the fact that when I started reading that comic, that it felt like I was in the middle of this huge universe of knowledge. Of like, I didn't know what was going on, but I was so interested that it made me want to go find out what happened.
Okay.
So on the one hand, I think that we pretty much demand continuity. I don't think that we can go back to those kind of days where we just had one-offs that ultimately didn't really mean anything anymore. Maybe it's part of just like the adult readership that's changing the comic market, but we seem to want things to have meaning. We want things to matter in comics. Like, any big thing that happens, think about this. Any like huge thing that they change, like Gwen Stacy really had Norman Osborn's kids or something like that, right?
I feel dirty even just thinking about that.
So there you go. I mean, that's what I'm
talking
about.
Where's the hand sanitizer?
That's what I'm talking about. Think about that. I mean, anytime that Marvel or DC really changes something major, there's literally only one of two things is going to happen. Fans are going to just bitch and complain that they're doing something to change a character, or they're changing continuity. Mm-hmm. So no matter how terrible it is, fans bitch about it. But then, a couple years later, if they decide, no, that never happened, then fans bitch about erasing it. Because it's like, oh, you can't take it out of the continuity, that happened. You know?
Yeah.
So you're kind of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't right now, the way things are.
Yeah. What's kind of interesting, or what I've kind of seen, I think, develop over time, and kind of using the example, like Gwen Stacy, Green Goblin, what have you, Death of Aunt May. It seems like over time, what you see nowadays with the big changes to characters or to the entire universe is, back in the day, it seems like you would get those stories in the old days because the writers were exploring a new plot line or throwing a new storyline out there. Nowadays, you see a lot of the changes because it almost seems like it's a marketing thing that the companies are throwing out there to get extra issues sold, or let's tie all these stories into this big earth-shattering event so that we can boost the sales of all the titles until we can bring the next thing in.
Well, that's the difference between sometimes it's the huge events that cause these continuity changes to occur, and sometimes it's just, hey, we're a new creative team, let's go on and create our brand new thing here.
Yeah.
I mean, Crisis on Infinite Earths, obviously that was a major continuity change. Even Infinite Crisis, there were some major continuity changes there too. But then there's stuff where literally just because somebody's new, they feel they need to make a change for no reason whatsoever. Daredevil did not need to wear armor. Okay? And that was a combination of the upper brass in Marvel feeling that the character was outdated and needed a change, and the writer and artist at the time thinking, we're tired of this red outfit here. Even if the folks out there in readership land aren't really clamoring for one, let's try and redesign the character. Let's see what happens. Hey, Superman's looked the exact same way all these years. Let's make him blue. And give him electric powers and see what happens. Eventually, these changes are going to become null and void, and you'll have the old character back. But every now and then, you'll find one continuity shift that really, really works, and it sticks with the character. But that's like 1 out of 10.
Yeah, and sometimes you can also get the storylines. And like, for example, what was it? I can't remember. Was it Miller that wrote Miller and Romita did the art, the Man Without Fear miniseries,
okay,
10 years ago or what have you, where they did the pre-story,
mm-hmm.
Matt Murdock growing up and kind of coming to grips with everything. That, I mean, had they put that within the pages of the regular Daredevil series, I mean, I think that would have been a fantastic thing. I mean, that would have, to me, that would have been Marvel's answer to Batman Year One, for lack of a better comparison.
Yeah, I can sort of see where you're coming from there, yeah. I mean, and also, I mean, there's also a difference between like retellings of an origin and completely changing a character. Because if you make a slight change to an origin, if you write a story that's quote-unquote better than the original story, then people might very well come and read it. I mean, Matt, in the past, I mean, have you read any stories that really stuck out to you that were, say, retellings of an origin that didn't really change the character itself, but maybe you might have related to the character a little better, understanding where his origins came from?
You know, I am, like, my thing, again, starting in the mid-80s, I was right on board the original Crisis, and, you know, at the time, as kind of maybe stupid as it seems to us now, that they wanted to trash the whole multiverse and different continuity that they've built up over the last 50 years at DC, that actually served a much greater purpose. Because, you know, they wanted to get to the core of the character. They wanted to kind of get rid of a lot of this stuff. And that was what they did. They rebooted the entire universe, started over with new number ones on all the books, and went forward. And I was right there on board with the whole Man of Steel relaunch from John Byrne. And that was a character to me that I had just no interest in before. The Man of Steel series. You know, if you go back and look at that, the pre-Crisis Superman, I mean, even in the 80s, it was at a point where a lot of us today, we wouldn't even know him. I mean, you know, he was working in a TV station on TV news reporter, and he was always, you know, just kind of had that, to my 15-year-old mind, that, you know, big boy scout, boring, you know, he can move planets and that's just too ridiculous kind of thing. I think in that case that, you know, the original post-Crisis revamp of the DC Universe continuity, I think really did serve a purpose. It really did work. I mean, it got you interested in the main, you know, again, right now they're hyping up about, oh, the Trinity, you know, we gotta make the Trinity important. Well, that was what happened, you know, after the original Crisis. We get Man of Steel, we get Perez Wonder Woman series, we get new Batman. Took a little longer than some of the others, but, you know, Batman came on board, again, with slightly changed continuity from what we'd been used to prior to that. And, you know, I think that's fine. I think that it does. I think that they need to do that every once in a while, because continuity can be either one of two things. And this is what I see happening right now in the industry. You have certain groups of creators who they just love, you know, to them continuity, they're like hogs in a slop bucket going through continuity. They, you know, they'll go back to some 1957 issue of Captain So-and-So, and they'll pull out some obscure little, you know, reference to something, and then they'll make that into a new story, or they'll take some lame villain from the old days that no one remembers and make him into a total killer badass. And that's one, you know, that's cool on the one hand. On the other hand, continuity is also can be a straitjacket, because a lot of times, like I said, anything that you want to do, if you're a new writer, if you're coming on this character, if all you're thinking about is, well, you can't have him do that, he wouldn't act that way, you know. Back in issue 246, you know, he said this, so he can't do that now. Yeah. You know, all that kind of stuff. It gets to just be too much, and a lot of, you know, some writers are just too devoted to that whole thing. You know, somebody like Roy Thomas, he was kind of the guy that started that off, really, in the 80s, of just being really continuity-driven, and, you know, it was kind of fun for a while. It was kind of interesting, you know, it was kind of fun because, like, oh, cool, you know, everything connects, oh, this all makes sense.
Yeah, but, it was interesting because he complained quite a bit during the whole Crisis thing. The stuff he was working with, you know, he believed in you know, all the work that he was doing, and, you know, yet when Wolfman was coming through and wanted to make all the changes, he's like, well, you know, I'll play along, but, you know, don't do this and this, because I have this stuff planned, so I can see where you're coming out with that as well.
So, yeah, that's always it's always a concern is, you know, think about this. I mean, a character like Superman or Batman, they have literally almost 70 years of stories that have been told about them. It gets harder and harder to actually tell something new about these old characters. Now, the solution that some people have come up with is to simply, you know, like I said, restart, pretend that nothing happened, and just, you know, pretend that, you know, this is a new number one issue and go forward. That's kind of like what Marvel has done. Now, Marvel I'm actually surprised, and I'm almost kind of waiting for them one of these days to sort of have their own version of Crisis. They're getting along with 40 years of continuity,
yeah,
with no reboots and just constant changes, kind of like
Iron Man,
a slide,
Iron Man.
Yeah, like a sliding scale.
Yeah,
like you said, that kind of thing. Like, oh well, you know, Reed Richards was in World War II. No, now he was in Korea. Now, no, he was in, you know, Vietnam, or no, he was in the Gulf War. He was in, you know, and it's kind of that works for a little while. Mm-hmm. But again, the more stories that you cram on somebody's back, the harder it is to tell something new.
Do you think maybe they missed the boat a little bit, maybe, and could have done more with something like, let's say, House of M?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Without a doubt. I mean, it feels like House of M has been entirely swept under the rug already. And the fact that it was one giant, you know, it was a great story at the time, and it feels as if this new Civil War stuff has pretty much decided that, you know, even already now, House of M is no longer relevant. When House of M could have very well set a new standard for the Marvel comics, now Civil War's doing that. Are Civil War's changes even going to stick? That's the question, because Marvel doesn't seem to enjoy making their stories forever relevant. And you could say that they're against continuity, you could say that they're against, you know, big stories lasting a long time, but guess what? When you unmask Spider-Man, you're going to have to stick with that. If you all of a sudden decide randomly, no, wait, that was an android, and then he's back in the costume, and Peter Parker's there, oh, happy life, yes, indeed, Peter Parker's back to his old ways, well, that's called a cop-out.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I was talking about before. I personally, like, to me, the fact that they decided to do that and make him, you know, out himself, I think that was a huge, huge mistake for that character.
Yeah.
And I personally would be fine with them figuring out some way to sweep it under the rug.
Uh-huh.
But even if, like I said, even if you don't like it, even if you think it's stupid, there's still going to be people that say, well, you made your bed, you're going to lie in it, you can't just erase it and pretend it never happened. You know, that's what continuity does. Now, a lot of people, you know, they pretty much sort of did that with the whole Clone Saga thing. Like, oh, that didn't really happen.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people don't care about that. So I don't, you know, it's always hit or miss on what kind of things people are going to accept or not accept as far as changes. Now, what do you guys think, because this is something I wanted to talk about with this. What do you think about the Marvel Ultimates line? Has that been successful, in your opinion, as sort of a mini kind of Crisis on Infinite Earth sort of relaunch?
Oh yeah, definitely, without a doubt. I mean,
what
they're doing with the Ultimate line is pretty much what DC Comics did when the Silver Age began. I mean, you had in a completely established continuity, and outside of that continuity, you had similar characters, sometimes even pretty much the same characters, only starting out from square one, working their way up, different continuity. You could do whatever you want with the characters. If you want Nick Fury to be black, he can be black. If you want the Wasp to be Asian, she could be Asian. If you want Peter Parker to be a high school student again, he could be a high school student. Similarly, if you want Wolverine to be sort of like a, you know, a punk ass just starting off again with an entirely different background, you can do that because it's the Ultimate line. It's not the regular Marvel universe. So if you're sick and tired of Marvel's continuity gaffes and all that, head on over to the Ultimate line, because so far they've been doing one hell of a job over the past 5 years.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what, the one thing I was going to say, the one thing that I kind of don't like about the Ultimate line, and one of the reasons why I think a lot of these reboots today sort of fail, is that a lot of times we just get the same stories retold back to us.
Yeah.
Now, again, like the first 100 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, we basically have people sitting on, oh, here's where he's going to fight Electro again. Oh, here's where he's going to fight Mysterio again. Here's where he's going to fight the Rhino again. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, when's the Black Cat going to come in? You know, oh, when's this character? That kind of thing is, I don't know what I think about that, because I really miss having a kind of classic Spider-Man book that, like, I used to read when I was in the 80s. But again, I don't necessarily want to read kind of like the same story over and over again. You know what I mean?
This,
the same thing. The same thing kind of goes on with, you know, if I was a Legion of Superheroes fan, I think I would have shot myself by now.
Because
there's, you know, there's been like 6-7 relaunches of that book in the last like decade, and every time they do it, it's one of those things, you know. Well, everything's brand new. Nothing happened before. Yeah. It's all wiped away. But then we're gonna retell the same kind of stories. We're gonna have the same characters. We're gonna have it, you know. It gets, I don't know if that's necessarily beneficial to keep doing that and keep going back to that same old mine of stories all the time.
Peter Rios, we feel your pain.
Yeah, there you go. Now, are you guys reading All-Star Superman?
I am. Yeah, I'm reading All-Star Superman. Yeah, I'm reading All-Star Superman, but you would not be able to get me within a 10-foot pole of All-Star Batman, because I read the first two issues of it, and I wanted to vomit. It was pretty much, and again, I am, most of the time I can find something that I like about a comic. Most of the time I can find some sort of redeeming factor about a comic, and other people have found redeeming factors about that, and you know what? I respect them for that, because I guess they're better men than I am, because I read this, and I've said it before on this podcast, I've said it before on other podcasts, when I see Batman, I want to see Batman. I do not want to see Marv from Sin City in the guise of Batman.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much how Frank Miller is writing Batman now. Mm-hmm. I'm the goddamn Batman. You know, and better yet, hey, let's have an entire issue with Black Canary running around with a whole bunch of panty shots and mention Batman twice in the entire issue. Hey, that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, the TNA Commandos, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
You need more of that.
But All-Star Superman has done a great job, that much I can say. It's sort of infusing the Silver Age with modern comics and doing one hell of a job of it.
Yeah, and from reading those, are those issues, to me, he's got the common elements that we're used to seeing in, you know, the regular mainstream titles, but I think at least with what he's doing there, it doesn't, at least to me, it doesn't feel like he's retelling everything that we've seen all over again.
Yeah.
It's like Morrison's got his, he's got all the tools, he's got all, the toys available to him, and he's basically just taking it out and, having some fun with it. And at least from what I've seen, all the way up through the most recent issue that came out, some of it seemed real playful, and then, he's kind of thrown it all the way to the other end of the scale and, darkened it down pretty well with the most recent issue that came out. And if you had people doing that with characters that have the amount of backstory and history that Superman does, why can't we do it with any other character?
Certainly a good question to ask.
The thing with, that's what was kind of interesting about it, and I don't know if either of you guys were familiar with the whole kind of Silver Age Superman, and if you read any of those Superman showcases or the Superman family showcases, that was the thing. We wonder why, why was that series so batshit crazy? And the truth of the matter is, under the editor, Mort Weisinger, at the time, they knew that, or he was intentionally aiming that book to be read by 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
And so he would just have,
Well, everything
they didn't
was
really
one,
care.
Was one and done, wasn't it?
It was, and most a lot of issues actually had like two or three little stories in one issue. But the thing of it is, like he was sort of at a point where, if it was fun, if it was interesting, if it was a crazy wacky story that a kid's gonna just go, wow, that's cool, it didn't matter what happened before. It didn't matter that, like, 5 issues ago, Superboy did one thing, and this issue now he's doing something else. It didn't really matter, because it was more about the entertainment, and that's how we got all that crazy shit, like the 37 colors of Kryptonite and the Super Monkey.
Yeah,
And Streaky and all that crap.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm not necessarily saying that we should go back to that, or it's possible to go back to that, because I don't think that as adult readers, people are going to stand for that. I think a lot of us...
I don't think they would.
No, they wouldn't.
We spend a lot of money, and we spend a lot of time collecting these books and reading these stories, and I think for a lot of us, we demand things to matter in comics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of my biggest gripes about comics is the just in the last few years, if you see the forum, if you go to different discussions, people are just constantly wanting characters to be killed off. Wanting characters, if they die, they better stay dead and never come back.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, I find that really, really bothersome because, you know, as long as the story is good, I don't really care. You know, if they kill off somebody in a story and it serves the purpose of the story, but then, a year or whatever later, if a new creative team comes on and the person says, you know what, I have this totally killer, Ted Kord Blue Beetle story that I want to do.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything wrong with that, bringing that character back, but we have a lot of people that would just go nuts about that because they want whatever happens is written in stone. I want that to be true, and I want that to matter, and I want that to be... So I don't know. I guess I'm more flexible than some people on that stuff.
Well, there is a place for stories like that now. With the introduction of stuff like JLA Classified and JSA Classified, you can tell stories that aren't in continuity and still have a place to put them. I mean, I can't believe it's not the Justice League. The Giffen DeMatteis sequel to formerly known as Justice League was inside of JLA Classified, even though at the time, these characters were in very different places. You were able to tell that funny, fun, exciting story inside of JLA Classified. People knew it wasn't in continuity, or if it was, it was happening about a year or so back, but you were still able to have a good time with it. If you have a Ted Kord story to tell, tell it in JLA Classified, and you'll be able to get away with that. People will buy it, people will enjoy it, and they'll move on to the next story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, but I just don't like, I'm not just particularly saying that one character. I do have a Blue Beetle fetish, but otherwise, I mean, really what I mean is, I'd rather that a creative team have the freedom to do what they want to do with the story, even if it goes against something else that's happened in the past. If a new creative team comes on Amazing Spider-Man and they just decide, you know what, Straczynski was smoking crack and none of that stuff he said...
You mean he's not already?
The spider totem thing and the Norman Osborn thing and any of that any of that crap, if that just goes away, I don't care. I'm happy with that.
JMS himself has already said that the Gwen Stacy stuff didn't happen, all right? So that sort of says something right there, because again, what I remember hearing, and I think he said that actually this at a recent convention, the story he told was not the story he wanted to tell. Marvel Brass made him change it. Originally, the kids were going to be Peters, and he had to change that at the very last second because they basically told him, oh, he can't possibly have grown-up kids because that would make him old, and if he's old, well, then he can't be the age he is in the comics, and so on and so forth. That's the reason why it had to be changed at the last second. That's why when you ask JMS today, just like when you ask Mark Waid about The Kingdom, the sequel to Kingdom Come, even though I like The Kingdom, and a lot of people out there do, Mark Waid, who wrote The Kingdom himself, the sequel to Kingdom Come, will usually tell you what story are you talking about.
Yeah.
And that'll happen in the world of comics sometimes. There will be a couple stories that even the creators themselves, after they do it, shake their head, bang it up against the wall, and say, why the hell did I ever write that in the first place? And it gets wiped under the rug. I mean, that'll happen sometimes with some comics. Going back to the Ultimates for a second, going back to the Ultimate line, what I love about that, and going with the idea of, you don't like seeing stories being retold, what I love about the Ultimate line is that, at least with Ultimate Spider-Man, and certainly with Ultimates as well, you're getting stories that, sure, they might have some of the characters that we already know, but you're getting entirely different stories with entirely different subplots than you ever found in the original Marvel Universe. So, you might be getting a clone saga in the Ultimate Universe, but it sure as hell is not the clone saga. And you might be getting at least a reasonable facsimile of the Skrulls in the Ultimates Universe, in Ultimates itself, but you're not getting the Skrulls. You're getting, the Ultimates version, which a much better, much different story for a newer generation. So that's what I love about the Ultimates line. I don't know if All-Star Superman is going to be able to keep that up. I don't know if All-Star Batman is going to keep that up, but that's, you know, that's DC's own thing. But I love the fact that you can get different stories with the same characters, which is something that you know, I've been wanting to see in comics for years now.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll also get the people that, you know, basically are complaining about, you know, the Ultimates and the Ultimate Universe. You know, they're saying, oh, okay, well, you know, you've got the Marvel Universe and, you know, you've got, you know, New Coke Marvel Universe, you know, a.k.a., you know, the Ultimates. You know, whether or not it was based on a marketing thing, saying, okay, well, we can put these characters out here and make them more accessible to, you know, to readers.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if we're kind of fudging things a little bit and, you know, retelling things or kind of modifying things as we go along, so it's not exactly the same as it was before. You know, I'll give Marvel props for at least doing that, at least doing something to make, you know, the larger history that they had kind of built up back behind all of their characters, doing something to make that more accessible to new readers. You know, everybody talks about how do you bring new readers in, or, you know, how do you bring the younger readers in. Well, I think what they did with the Ultimate line, I think that was, you know, probably their best bet at bringing those new readers into the books.
But you know what, my contention with that whole line of thinking is that, I mean, did these books actually bring in any new readers?
Oh yeah.
My take is always just, well, I mean, I don't know if we have, maybe you can tell me this, but I mean, to me, I just see the same old people buying these books that buy every other book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see, like, some kid coming in off the street and be like, oh, wow, Ultimate Spider-Man, that's my Spider-Man. I'm going to read that character. I see the same people. They maybe never have read it, or they've been looking for, you know, always collecting a new number one or whatever. That mm-hmm. Those are the kind of people that are still reading these. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't know necessarily, like I said, if...
See,
it's a good idea. I think Marvel has too many different lines right now that make things a little more complicated. Try to figure out what's going on. Now you've got, and I know that some of these have cleared themselves up recently, but you know, you look at it, you got like a Ultimate Spider-Man title. You have the regular three or four Spider-Man titles in the Marvel Universe. You had the Marvel Knights Spider-Man title.
Mm-hmm.
You had. Like, all these different kind of, like, I didn't even know what the hell was going on. Like, I didn't know which book was which. What was, you know, is
which
it
one's canon
more...
and which one's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, and that kind of thing is, you know, I don't necessarily know if, I guess maybe it's good. You have, you know, whatever, 24 flavors of Spider-Man. You can choose whichever one that you prefer, I suppose.
My favorite is the purple one.
Yeah, I like mint chocolate chip, actually, myself.
Oh, yeah. But, well, also, I mean, at the same time, to go with the idea of the, of, you know, have you seen any readers that were not into Spider-Man or were not reading comics before picking it up because of the Ultimate line, quite frankly, I have. And I know a couple people online, I know a couple people in real life, I know a couple people that, you know, maybe might have ever so slightly dabbled when they were younger, but then eventually came back. I've known younger people as well that hadn't read comics, had heard about Ultimate Spider-Man and started picking it up. I'd say I know about, and this is a small number to say, but I know about at least 5 to 10 people in my life that began reading comics because of the Ultimate line, because they saw that it was, you know, garnering a lot of good press, that it looked like it was an interesting start, that for years they had been literally afraid to pick up something like Spider-Man because of all the years of continuity behind it. With Ultimate Spider-Man, they were a bit less frightened because, hey, this has only been around for a couple of years. I can understand this. I can go back and read the trades and actually physically catch myself up to Spider-Man.
And
that's something you can't do with a Spider-Man that's been around since the 60s.
And you bring up a good point with that, because the place, to be honest, where I've seen the new readers, you know, brought in, like, you know, for example, with the Ultimate books and even more specifically with, like, Ultimate Spider-Man or Ultimate X-Men, honestly, isn't in the comic shops. It's in your bookstores that are carrying the trades.
Sure,
and, I mean, you know, locally, you know, we've got our local Borders, you know, and with, you know, the shelves full of manga and, you know, the shelves full of the Marvel and the DC and, you know, the independent trades. And that's, to be honest, where I see the kids that, you know, are, you know, let's say junior high or high school age, and that they're reading and picking up the books. I mean, you know, a lot of them, you know, they're doing the whole, you know, I'm going to check out the entire book while I'm here at the store, you know, with my ice mocha or what have you. But then, you know, I also see them, you know, carrying the books up to the front checkout at the same time. I honestly don't see those kids at the local comic shop, and you know whether it's a stigma for them to walk through that door, I can't say, but that's actually where I see more of the younger readers coming in. Is in maybe it's a whole kind of culture shift that we're just not used to, because we're used to getting the monthly books. We've been used to getting the monthly books for so long. That's our way that we've built our own personal history up with these titles. But this is the way that the kids today are getting into them.
Trade paperbacks can do that to anybody, and it certainly has.
Yeah, I think I don't think any of us can argue that part of the success of why manga has been so big with kids these days is the fact that, it's in print. Every volume that you need to follow a story is available on the shelf. It's easier to do that nowadays than it used to be. And maybe because I used to be a bigger nerd when I was a kid, I don't know. But I liked, when I was 15 or 14, when I was first starting out with superhero comics, that was always part of the game, like kind of the hunt for the back issue. We've shifted, our mentality has shifted greatly towards, I'm not going to buy back issues. I'm just going to wait for the trade to come out.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything really wrong with that. And that's like I said, that's like you suggested, perhaps, that having the whole series available, having going to the bookstore and looking and seeing, here's book one.
Yeah.
Start here. Mm-hmm. You can do that, and that makes it a little more attractive. My only concern, my only question with something like that, though, now is, Bendis and Bagley, they're almost at 100 issues.
Yeah.
And
in fact, issue 100 comes out in about a week or so, if I remember correctly.
So, at this point, that's a hell of a continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're just in you're in the same boat. If you, right now, if you want to get started, you're like, oh, I'm 100 issues behind. There's a lot of, a whole crap load of stuff in that series already that you have to kind of, know and go back and read. So really, I guess, what's the answer? Is there, do we need to have a reboot? Should there be a continuity reboot every X number of years for different titles?
I think these days you can almost, I think with the internet and the boards and what have you, I think the publishers have a much better sense of what the, I don't know, you want to call it, the pulse of the readership is. Back in the old days, the 70s, the 80s, pre original Crisis on Infinite Earths, the companies really, the only thing that they had to kind of gauge how accessible or how well the books were doing is just straight up sales figures. Nowadays, you've got your blogs, the forums, email in general, podcasts that, give them so many different ways of kind of getting a sense of how their books are doing. So I think they can be a little bit more flexible as far as whether or not they see a need to make a sweeping change.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as continuity itself, I'm not as worried about past continuity because of the rise in the trades. If you need to get, the backstory on what came before with a character, there's so many books that are available on the various characters. You can pick those up, Amazon, Borders, in-stock trades, wherever you may need, eBay, what have you. You can pick up the backstory or the history of where a character came from before and still be able to continue on with, let's say, the new status quo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, even for a reader who is going to be coming into something like Ultimate Spider-Man in issue, say, 50 or something like that, it's pretty damn accessible even where it is. Yeah. And it's something that you can't find in a Spider-Man comic today. Like, for instance, if you only knew the movies, okay, if you only knew Spider-Man movies, and you went to pick up a Spider-Man comic today, and all of a sudden everybody knows who Spider-Man is in the Marvel Universe, you're going to be, what the hell is going on here? You're going to have to go back, and you're going to have to go back, and you're going to have to go back, and you have to pick up everything. With Spider-Man, in the Ultimate Spider-Man universe, there have been stories that were, you know, quote unquote integral to the actual character building, but at the same time, not enough to sort of bog you down into continuity itself and not be able to understand what you're reading. And that's something that a lot of Marvel comics today do not have going for them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of DC comics even. I mean, with One Year Later, that was the best thing that they could have done. And I'm going to talk about One Year Later actually now, after I mention this, to sort of close up the Ultimate line before we move on to One Year Later. What do you guys think about the crossover that the Ultimate line is having with Supreme Power now? The Ultimate Power that's going to be coming out. I mean, do you feel that this is something that might be maybe detrimental to the line? I mean, being able to cross over with another quote-unquote restart, as it were, with Supreme Power, which obviously is not the same Squadron Supreme that everybody was used to. But what do you guys think about the crossover from that universe with the other universe?
Well, I mean, again, I'm not familiar with that book. I'm not reading it right now, but mm-hmm. Anytime if you have a self-contained sort of little area and you kind of open up these different doors, you're always sort of asking for a little bit of trouble, because that's kind of like the whole DC multiple Earth syndrome all over again, where you have, I'm teaming up with the Flash from Earth X and Earth 1 mm-hmm. and Earth 2 and all these different places, you know, that give people a big headache sometimes. Yeah. So I'm not necessarily saying that a one-off or whatever shouldn't happen. You know, the story should trump everything, really. If it's a good story, then who cares?
Yeah. Yeah,
so I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I agree as well. I think, you know, you should be looking at the story, and if the story's there, you know, put it out there for everybody to enjoy. If you think it's going to be something that's going to cause you a problem, you know, do it as a one shot, or do it as a limited series out of continuity. It's been done before, so why can't you do it now? It does. You know, the crossover doesn't have to be canon for each universe after they're done with the story to be entertaining.
I would agree with that. Yeah, sure.
Do you guys, just kind of going off of what you just said, Chris? You know, we all know that we have this opportunity to do like Elseworld stories or standalone or All Star or whatever that are not in continuity. But do you think that people really? I mean, are those titles as successful? Do people ultimately really care? If a story's not in continuity, do they really care that much about it? Because I always get the impression that, you know, people want, they want things to matter in that mainstream continuity, and if it's kind of outside of that, it's just sort of like, yeah, that's kind of interesting, but, you know, so what? Yeah, it's not the main thing.
I can only speak for myself. To be honest, if the story's entertaining, and if, you know, it's not a waste of the paper that it's printed on, or, you know, the money I'm spending on it, I'm all for having the stories out of continuity. I mean, there's series that personally I enjoyed. I mean, you know, the old Batman Gotham by Gaslight by, you know, Mignola, or the Justice League, was it the Nail by Davis.
Right.
Those were completely out of continuity for DC. Hell, even the old crossovers that they used to have, you know, Spider-Man and Superman, Teen Titans, X-Men, completely mm-hmm. out of continuity, but, you know, taking elements from both companies and putting them together in at least what I thought were entertaining stories, there wasn't going to be any lasting effects from those, but it didn't make it any less entertaining for me when I was reading them.
Amalgam.
Speaking of, non-entertaining.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Hey, there were a couple things that were sort of interesting, like Iron Lantern and Challengers of the Fantastic.
Oh,
I
God.
I honestly, you know.
The Uncanny X-Force.
No, I liked some of those books, depending on the creative teams. The whole, like, I don't even remember what the names of these guys were, but like the Superman Captain America hybrid guy was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Was it Super Soldier or something? I can't remember.
That's what it was.
Like
Super Soldier,
And then was like, did Peter David do some kind of like Spider Boy?
Spider Boy was really good. Yeah,
that was interesting. That was okay.
Thor Ryan.
I was
Ryan.
Actually.
Honestly, Thor Ryan with John Romita Jr. art was actually really good.
That name alone, though, just somebody should have been bitch slapped for that.
Sounds like something you need a medication for.
Exactly. Doctor, help me. I have Thor Ryan.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on from the Ultimate Universe, we have some forum posts that I want to share with you guys, and the first one is from Lobo, Sheriff Lobo.
Hungry like the wolf.
Exactly, hungry like the wolf. And here's what he has to say on the topic at hand. I think that DC and Marvel should reboot their universes periodically like DC did when they went from the Golden Age to the Silver Age heroes. If the Punisher is a Vietnam vet and the Teen Titans were formed in the 1960s, how old are they now? How does a character who's in their 20s or 30s deal with 50 years of continuity? How much suspension of disbelief should the audience have to bear? And, well, he actually sort of makes a pretty decent point there because, well, quite frankly, if the Teen Titans were formed in the 60s, they're not exactly teenagers anymore now, are they?
No, no. I think probably DC and Marvel probably figure that at least a good majority of their audience is kind of dropping dead on them or, you know, or just is getting senile as we go along. So, you know, we forget everything else that's come beforehand.
Well, you know what? The truth of the matter is, like, the Teen Titans is an example of characters that, you know, granted, they haven't aged equivalently to how long they've been out there, but, you know, those are characters that have aged. They have grown from teens to, you know, I don't know how the hell old they are, but at least
they're leap year babies.
Mid to late 20s, I would say, at this point. So, you know, that's an example where, again, we have some characters. We seem to always have the young teen characters that grow and get older, while the older characters like Batman and Superman don't really seem to get all that much older.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I think we're at a point right now where Nightwing's actually older than Batman.
Well, what gets me the most is actually, okay, when they reintroduce Jason Todd, how the hell is Jason Todd, like, 2 years younger than Dick Grayson all of a sudden? This came out of left field. I mean, he was supposed to be about 16 when Dick Grayson was, like, 20. So now, all of a sudden, when I look at Jason Todd, he looks like he's the same age as Dick. So what the hell was the point of replacing Dick in the first place?
Well, they didn't know Dick. I'm sorry, that came out.
Dick cannot be contained. Dick needs to breathe free.
Oh my God, Dick needs to roam on his own every now and then.
Well, you know what, part of the thing was, I mean, it wasn't like Robin got too old to be Robin. He just decided as, you know, a human being that, hey, I'm not going to be this guy's sidekick for the rest of my life and kind of went out on his own. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily bother me too much. I think he, you know, like I said, I really do think that he's right that Marvel and DC, I think they do need to have these little reboots. And DC has done, actually, I think, too many reboots over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Crisis, you know, the original Crisis on Infinite Earths, I think, was a great idea, and it was a solid, you know, we're just going to start over. And that was very effective. The other ones that have come after that, especially something like the steaming pile of excrement that was known as Zero Hour. I don't even know what the hell that was supposed to be about. I just know that
That was kind of like, you know, the whiteout, or, you know, the correction fluid, you know, for Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Well, Zero Hour is basically Hal Jordan throwing a giant hissy fit, bringing Batgirl back for no reason whatsoever, and then just killing her off for the hell of it, and then he dies. But no, he
doesn't. They also killed off the JSA during that thing, which has subsequently been reversed. But then that again, you know, the average person, you know, I don't know, I can't even imagine what somebody, if they've never read comics before, even now, even with what they've done, you know, so they had the Zero Hour, and they've had a couple other things, and the newest, you know, Infinite Crisis, I gotta say, I haven't found it to be that integral to the DC Universe as far as what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
I know you wanted to get into talking about 1 year later.
Yeah.
But you know what, the thing is, it's almost like they just want to do it for the sake of doing it, rather than for an actual purpose. Like,
do you think they're too big to do a reboot of everything correctly or well?
You know what, they could have just done that. Because that's basically what 1 year later is, sort of, is new creative teams. Basically, the 1 year later is sort of like, okay, we have no idea what the hell's going on now in any book.
Yeah.
We have to keep buying it to figure it out. So they kind of tricked us there.
There's a post, actually, by Matthew Guy that actually sort of goes a little bit into what we were just talking about just now. Reboots, like it or not, are needed in the DC and Marvel universe every so often. I'm very pleased for the big three reboot of DC from the original Crisis, Byrne with Superman, Miller with Batman, and Perez with Wonder Woman, because collectively, collecting 50-plus years of comics is a bit too much for almost anyone to do. I got the issues of Byrne's run on Superman, a hardcover of Miller's Year One with Batman, and a trade of Perez's run on Wonder Woman. Reboots can be used to get new readers into the hobby that the industry needs now more than ever, and the new one-year-later reboots are good reads except for Wonder Woman because of the excessive delays similar to Civil War. Finally, comics need a set origin story unless you read an all-star title when they come out from DC Elseworlds stories of years past or Ultimates from Marvel that can go down its own universe road to read from. And that's Matthew Guy. So he seems to like the one-year-later. Quite frankly, I like the one-year-later stories so far, and actually, I've actually been more interested in a lot of the one-year-later stories than I was before that, mainly because of three things. Superman, Batman, and I'm going to surprise myself by saying this, but Manhunter. Manhunter was a great story before One Year Later, and it got even better after One Year Later. And a lot of the titles that have come out, Outsiders, I've been very, very interested in. Robin has been an amazing read since One Year Later. And I never picked up Robin. The last issue of Robin I picked up was when Robin came out. I have Robin number one. That's it. I had never picked up another Robin issue after that. One Year Later got me to pick it up, and it's been an amazing read ever since. Paul Dini has been doing an amazing job of, we talked about before how people won't pick up stories that really don't have too much continuity going for them. Well, Paul Dini's been putting out one-shots under the Batman title. I believe it's Detective Comics that he's doing right now. And even though they're supposed to have, you know, some sort of relationship, one issue to the next, it's pretty much all one-shot titles that remind me a lot of the Batman animated series. So I've been really enjoying what I've been cutting out of One Year Later so far. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about it, but to me, it's been much better and actually much needed, sort of have a new starting point for DC Comics again.
Yeah, I'll add also, I think probably one of the things that's you know, built my interest in the One Year Later titles as well is, you know, having 52 coming out at the same time, kind of seeing how they get from point A to point B, how they fill in that missing time in the universe without focusing on the big three. I think that's built up my interest in DC overall. And I'll admit I have been picking up more DC now than Marvel, you know, post Infinite Crisis and also, you know, post all the One Year Later storylines.
Well, I mean, what about you, Matt? I mean, obviously, I mean, you've sort of, you know, said your piece on One Year Later already, but I mean, are there any One Year Later titles that you're picking up that you're enjoying so far? Or?
My only thing about One Year Later is really that I don't see that they did anything in that they couldn't have just done by putting quality writing teams on the books anyway. There's really nothing integral about what's happened. I mean, I'm not saying that the books aren't better, because I think that anytime you put a good creative team and a good writing team on a book, it's going to be successful. This whole kind of thing where it's like, oh, what happened during those that crazy year? If they wanted to change, you know, all these different stories, they could have done that. And I, you know, again, I'm looking at some of these creative teams that are, you know, much more interesting, and they're getting my attention compared to, you know, generic whoever doing whatever book. So on the one hand, I mean, it's a good thing that it's made them kind of refocus on putting this stuff together. On the other hand, I think that Infinite Crisis in general was just really a manufactured event that didn't really have any purpose. There was no real reason for that, and, you know, just to have some kind of shake-up.
Like, so you think it was more just kind of something, you know, DC kind of waving their arms and, you know, hey, everybody, check me out, and then once they had everybody's attention, they put out, you know, the A-list creative teams to build the interest back in the regular books?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to be naive and say that they're not a business and they're not there to make money.
Yeah.
So while I think that the original Infinite Crisis actually served a purpose beyond sales, this event is a little less like purposeful and more kind of just towards the sales side of things. Yeah. And as a look at me thing, hey, we're doing good work and we're putting good creators on these titles and you should check these out, I think that's fine. Now, the only problem is that I don't necessarily know if these One Year Later titles are really that much of a friendly jumping on point all the time. Now, some of them are more than others, but again, a lot of the stuff that we've been getting so far, and a lot of the stories are good, and I'm not saying that I don't like them, but a lot of it's just sort of been kind of relying on that whole mystery aspect.
Yeah.
Throwing a lot of crap out there like, oh, geez, how did all these crazy guys get on the Teen Titans? Well, you'll just have to wait and find out.
Yeah.
you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, hey, so Teen Titans has been damn good, so.
Yeah, who would have ever thought I'd see Kid Devil back in action?
And we've also got a post here from John Mayo, and he wrote a essay here, so I'm going to just take bits and pieces of it, or else this will become a two-hour show. So let's actually get a little bit of it going over here. I think the reboots are neither needed nor good for the long-term health of the company and characters. A better approach would be to have writers and editors thinking beyond just the story they are telling and not writing themselves or future writers into a corner. To me, a character reboot is a starting point for the character from the start. It involves a retelling of the backstory with noticeable changes to it. Examples would be Superman's Man of Steel and, more recently, Superman Birthright. Both of these involve changes to Superman's origin and backstory, which cast a new light on later events of Superman's life. To me, continuity is the overall backstory of the character. I tend to be a bit forgiving at times on micro-continuity as long as it isn't a glaring error. I consider micro-continuity to be the exact specific details of the previous told stories, things that subtly altering doesn't really change subtly altering things doesn't really change the nature of the event. For me, the micro-continuity is only really a factor within a given storyline, like, say, having a character's arm clearly and traumatically broken that magically heals in the next issue of the same storyline. That bugs me, as it is something that either the writers or editors should have caught. Continuity can be a great storytelling tool if used properly, or a huge problem if used wrong. Having characters grow over the course of adventures makes them seem more real. I don't think that continuity needs to be front and center in every storyline, but there are times when not mentioning a major past event just doesn't make sense. Not everything that happens to a character is really crucial to the continuity of a character. Character aging does have to be fudged a bit to prevent Batman from being far too old to keep fighting crime each night, but character aging and continuity aren't the same thing. And as a reader, I find it a bit offensive when writers basically ignore continuity because they just don't care. Isn't it a writer's job to make me care about a character, to get personally invested in what happens to the character? And doesn't telling me that the past adventures of the character don't matter go directly against that? But sometimes stories are told that later just need to be flat-out removed from the backstory. Mistakes get made. Things that seemed like a good idea turn out not to be. Periodic cleaning of the backstory is probably needed, but needs to be done carefully. And here's a main point in his email. I don't consider the Infinite Crisis, and this is a big point in his forum post, it's not an email. I would consider the Infinite Crisis 1 year later event to be a reboot of the DC Universe. A restructuring of the backstory continuity, sure, but not a clean reboot like restarting Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman like happened after the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Giving writers and editors a chance to retroactively clean up some past mistakes or confusions is okay if done well. If done poorly, it can just make things more confusing. As for the concept that there are characters out there with 50 years of comics as part of the continuity of the characters, I'm having a hard time thinking of any at the moment. I'm reasonably sure that the Batman I was reading in the early 80s didn't have all of the Golden Age Batman stories as part of the continuity. Same with Superman and Wonder Woman. I can't think of any characters off the top of my head that have been published for 50 years straight and had all those adventures in the same continuity. I think this might be a myth that people that aren't in favor of continuity use to justify a periodic rebooting. And certainly some great points in there, especially considering the fact that he doesn't consider Infinite Crisis / 1 year later to be a reboot, but more of a restructuring, which actually makes a lot of sense in the scheme of things.
Yeah, I have to agree with what he says there. I mean, I think, you know, Infinite Crisis, DC, I think even when they solicited it, you know, panels at the cons or what have you, they were looking at it as a means of kind of getting their characters back on, I don't know if you want to call it the right track or the heroic track, you know, brightening them up after they, you know, gotten so dark or, you know, things had gotten so kind of grim for them. I think, you know, the whole universe or the DC universe, you know, you went from a single Earth to, you know, Alexander Luthor splitting things up to a multiple, you know, multiverse and then back down to New Earth again. You know, I have to agree with what John says as far as, you know, it's not a reboot per se, but it is a way that DC is kind of trying to make things more accessible to the readers and maybe giving the writers an opportunity to kind of clean things up.
I mean, Matt, do you think this accessibility really does help out the readers? Do you feel that DC is sort of just doing this, I mean, as you previously stated? I mean, maybe now that you heard John's words, maybe it changed your ideas on this a little bit, but do you feel that they're just doing it from a marketing standpoint, or do you feel they're doing this for the readers also?
Well, you know what? Don't get me wrong. I don't necessarily think that that was the whole sole purpose of the event. I kind of agree with what he's talking about, and on the other hand, I kind of disagree. Some of the things that he mentioned, specifically about, you know, going back and kind of like dealing with retcons, he thought was more entertaining, more permissible. That idea of, you know, things that we saw didn't mean what we thought they meant, and that kind of stuff. I don't necessarily know if I like that approach or not. We've had that happen. Really, specifically, most recently with the whole identity crisis, thing where, you know, we have all of our favorite heroes. We're told that they engaged in some rather horrific activity, which for some people, you know, that's cool. For other people, that's kind of like really nasty, really bad. You know, think that our characters that we love would do such things, but. You know, I don't mind, like, he kind of talked about how he didn't like it, or he felt he was being insulted when certain creators came on and ignored certain things of continuity.
Yeah.
I don't really mind that so much, again, because that kind of goes down to the whole, you know, each creative team, each writer and artist, they have a specific vision, kind of like a specific story of what they want to do, and... You know, if people want to pick and choose, I'd rather that continuity be sort of like a big grab bag, where, you know, Peter Parker has been around for 40 years, but we don't have to necessarily always say that every single one of those comics happened.
Yeah.
And even if we do, we don't have to have them all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm as a writer, I want to choose and go back to a story from, like, the 70s. Mm-hmm. And bring that up and make a, you know, a tie-in with that. I think that's fine, but we don't necessarily have to acknowledge that every single thing, you know, happened to this one character.
I mean, the Illuminati. The whole reason why Illuminati happened in the first place was because, well, Brian Michael Bendis went back and saw these characters together in one panel of the Kree-Skrull, I believe it was the Kree-Skrull War, and pretty much said, hey, that could work. And, you know, the whole secret society of the Illuminati pretty much came out of that one particular panel right there. That can happen sometimes. It could lead to some damn good storytelling.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this... Continuity, let's face it, it's a minefield.
Yeah.
We want it as readers, as people who are hooked into the whole soap opera-y aspect of comics, we want continuity. As adults, we want comics that we read to matter. We don't want them to just randomly change things. We don't want, you know, Aunt May to be dead one issue, alive the next, and then dead again the next issue.
Yeah.
You know, we want it to matter. And so when these things change, when people do make these choices... you know, a lot of times there's a huge fan outcry. No matter what happens, no matter what they choose, there's always going to be someone that's upset that they chose something or they chose to ignore something else. Personally, I think that we should just, I guess, learn to maybe lighten up a little bit more.
Yeah.
When it comes to this kind of stuff, but I know that's kind of baiting the bull for some people. You know, they don't want to hear that kind of thing. And, you know, everyone reads comics differently. And there's different, you know, I appreciate the fact that there's different series that have different levels of continuity. So if you don't really care, you know, you don't care, you don't really want to wade into that whole mess, you know, you have your Ultimates or you have your one-shots or you have your, you know, whatever, different stories that have different levels of different continuity. Now, I mean, I do agree with what he's talking about. The 1 year later and the whole Infinite Crisis is really not... It's really not a relaunch because things really aren't that different than they were before. It's not like Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh, sure, yeah.
What they did use, and again, I think they wanted to do this with Zero Hour. Zero Hour kind of came around because they wanted to kind of fix things.
Yeah.
that they thought were still wrong with the universe. And that's kind of what I see with Infinite Crisis. It's on the same sort of level because it has these sort of little changes into things.
Mm-hmm.
Like pre-Crisis we had where, you know, Wonder Woman wasn't a founding member of the JLA.
Mm-hmm.
And now after Infinite Crisis, now she is again. Just, you know, little things like that that have been tweaked and changed a little bit. So, you know, ultimately it's not really that big of a deal. It's not really that big of a change. But again, you know, I think we're seeing quality stories coming out of 1 year later based on the actual quality creative teams involved rather than the gimmick, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned Zero Hour, and actually, you can actually sort of compare Zero Hour to 1 year later because, well, they tried to sort of restart things with Zero Hour with those Zero issues, mm-hmm. to try and get people back on board, and, well, quite frankly, they kind of sucked. So that didn't exactly work out for them. But with 1 year later, you didn't have to go Zero issues, but you did get, you know, the continuation, but that 1 year gap, and everything starting out as if, you know, it is a 1 year later, that this event just happened, that things have changed. With Zero Hour, an event happened, things changed, but it just didn't really change too much to benefit the readers.
Right. It's not, not that whole, you know, not that different from the universe that we know. So I don't know. I guess it's a maybe they could have done more. I don't know. Do you think it's a wasted opportunity to actually make more change, or was that even necessary?
With Zero Hour or with 1 year later?
Well, with 1 year later and okay. After Infinite Crisis, I mean, could they have or should they have used this as an opportunity to maybe go a little more clean slate than they did?
I didn't really think it was necessary. Honestly, I feel that what they did was good enough for me. I mean, if we want to know exactly what happened and why these guys, you know, had their major changes, hell, read 52, or eventually it'll be brought up in their books. But I really like the path that they went with this. You know, not exactly a hard reboot, but, you know, sort of having still some changes in characters and giving us a brand new starting point with some subtle changes every now and then, because, you know, for example, Wonder Woman founded the Justice League again. It wasn't Black Canary. Black Canary was a member of the Justice League. She just was not one of the founding members. Sure, that changes Black Canary, and it changes Wonder Woman, but it brings Wonder Woman back to that iconic status of the Big Three again, which I feel was sort of necessary in the DC Comics. I love Black Canary, and I love her backstory, but this change was sort of necessary, and it came out of Infinite Crisis and 1 year later, and hey, I'm loving Justice League so far, so that's certainly a plus.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that it was necessary to do a clean slate relaunch again. I'm quite frankly getting kind of tedious. You know, those are striking me as being kind of tedious, especially when, as we said before, most of the time when you have a relaunch again, whole total reboot,
yeah,
you just spend the next like 10 years reintroducing the same villains, reintroducing the same characters that you had already before. So I don't mind. I do think that it's a good idea to sort of streamline things. You know, I wish that this event would have fixed the whole, like, Hawkman problem.
Oh.
maybe it will. I don't know. I understand that they want to get rid of things that are just too damn complicated.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the whole protoplasm, I'm an angel or whatever, Supergirl thing is just mm-hmm. way too damn complicated.
Oh, sure,
so,
yeah.
So we're going to go back to making her just be Superman's cousin, mm-hmm. which, you know, is a lot simpler, makes a lot more sense. You know, it goes against the whole, like, burn last son of Krypton kind of thing, but, you know, ultimately I think it's probably a better idea the simpler things are. If you have to take, you know, if you have to spend 15 minutes, 25 minutes trying to explain who a character is, I think you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I mean, those were definitely some good points over there, Matt. I mean, Chris, what do you think about the situation? I mean, do you feel that it would have been better off with a hard reboot, or do you feel this sort of soft reboot, similar to what happened with Zero Hour, only done good?
More gooder.
Exactly. Yeah, more good. There you go. Or gooder, as it were, that they did with 1 year later is working well for DC.
You know what? I think it, personally, doing kind of, you know, the soft reboot would have been fine. You know, they could have put out, you know, let's say a special, you know, kind of like they did with the, you know, Countdown to Infinite Crisis, something to kind of preface the whole 1 year later thing, and maybe also to kind of fold in some of the changes that they were going to make as far as, you know, Wonder Woman back within, you know, the JLA founders.
Yeah.
You know, kind of maybe explaining Power Girl's place in the DC universe, something like that, without having to go through everything that they did with Infinite Crisis. I mean, you know, if you're going from, you know, pre 1 year later, in the course of, you know, 52, you could have folded in the big three and shown how they've gone from a darker place back to, you know, everybody's working together again for the greater good. You know, Batman's not this, you know, pain in the ass, you know, backstabber, and Wonder Woman's, you know, not about to snap everybody's neck,
mm-hmm.
you know, if she hits a bad month on the PMS cycle.
Oh, no, you didn't.
No, no.
Damn, son.
Oh. But yeah, you know, I think they could have gotten by with a soft reboot. Would they have gotten the sales numbers, or would they have gotten the attention? No, but, you know, creatively, I still think they could have done it well.
Well, also, I mean, the fact that it took them this to actually get the good creators on is certainly a good thing. I mean, Chris, were there any comments that you wanted to make also on John's post that you haven't had a chance to make yet?
You know what? Basically, I mean, I agree with what John said as far as, you know, as long as you're doing it right. Basically, if you've got the story, you know, just, you know, kind of throw everything else under the bus. You know, one of the things that he did, you know, make in his post was that, you know, he said that the Superman from the 80s, you know, Batman and Wonder Woman didn't have, you know, the 50 years of continuity. That's true, but then, you know, DC back in the day, you know, with the Flash, where they made the transition from the Golden Age Flash, you know, to the Silver Age Flash, or Crisis on Infinite Earths, they had thrown, you know, a majority of everything else out the window and were working with, you know, kind of a new status quo. And I for one, kind of think that kind of helped refresh the whole DC universe as a whole. It breathed new life into it. And it honestly, it brought me back to, you know, those iconic characters in DC that I hadn't been reading regularly for quite some time.
And you know what? That feeling that you felt with the 80s is exactly how I felt with 1 year later. So I can sort of see the similarities there already, because that Batman was just wow in that first arc, and that Superman with Kurt Busiek and Jeff Johns writing it, and the art was fantastic. And even though Alan Heinberg's Wonder Woman has been late, first two issues have been damn good so far. So yeah, we are back to that iconic state for these characters, and that's pretty much what they were looking for there. So
yeah.
Any final thoughts anybody has on the topic at hand before we wrap things up?
I just hope, you know, that they can keep the momentum going with the books. That's always kind of the problem, that it's real easy to start off strong after sort of a relaunch where you can do whatever you want. Right now we have a big cushion with, you know, and I'm talking about DC. We have, you know, we have this 1 year cushion where we don't really know what happened, and so we can't really judge whether or not it makes sense yet. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. we're going to have to see how, you know, if this all comes together, how, you know, the whole 52 thing pans out. If you know, 1 year later from now, if this stuff is still, you know, rocking our world, or if it's kind of back to the same old fill-in creator teams that are not that interesting. So I'm hoping for the best. I'm really wondering if, like I said, I'm wondering when or if we're going to see something similar to this happen over at the House of Ideas, because they've really gone, you know, they've really gone quite a while without any kind of continuity reboot or shift. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what they do.
It'd be very interesting indeed, to tell you the truth. And hey, I mean, they could very well have their Crisis on Infinite Earth someday with the Ultimate Universe and the regular universe. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. Let me rephrase that. I hope it's not anytime soon, because I like the two separate continuities as they are. But who knows? You know, 20 years down the line or even before that, we could see something huge like that in Marvel. You never know.
Yeah. Keep an eye on the sales figures. I'm sure that those will be, you know, the early warning signs.
I hear you with that. Yeah, I mean, I think we did a good job of pretty much going to all ends of the earth with this, and I guess it sort of makes sense for to announce this now, since this does have something to do with continuity, as it were, as continuity has brought on a new Superman title, which is going to be our second 22 pages. That would be 22 pages number 2, which will be done around mid-October, somewhere along those lines. And this, of course, is Superman Confidential number 1. Now, Superman Confidential number 1 is currently available for $1.49 on DCBS. The product code is, get your pens, folks, SEP-06-02-06A. That's SEP-06-02-06A. Regular price is $2.99, so it's 50% off at DCBS. You can also get it at your local comic shop. The estimated print date is October 12th, so those of you who do DCBS, you should be getting it by November. We'll probably have the review around that week, possibly a week before that, so any of you who are getting it late, you can just wait to listen to that episode. But yeah, the 22 pages for this month will be Superman Confidential number 1. We'll go Marvel first, as we did, and then let's go DC, and then maybe we'll go independent from there. But I think that works for everybody. I mean, what do you guys think? That worked well here? Darwin Cook, Tim Sale, that work for you?
Sounds good. Spread the love.
Damn straight.
Good enough.
All right, well, first of all, I got to thank Chris for joining us here, because, Chris, you have gone well beyond my expectations, my friend. It's been a hell of a conversation.
And our expectations
here
were quite low, so that wasn't too hard.
Of course. I mean, anything recommended by Braxton is automatically going to be low expectations for me. But
hey, I have to live up to the legend. What can I say?
But you certainly did a great job here, man, and you will certainly be on in the future, that much I can guarantee, because it's been a hell of a lot of fun talking to you, my friend.
Hey, I've been having a kick-ass time. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, no problem, man, and thank you very much to Matt as well for waking up for this episode, and I hope
it was worth it.
Well, what? You mean we're better than dreams? That's awesome. Sweet.
There you go.
Well, you know, you're in my dreams, too, so it's kind of
yet again, too much information.
But we're not going to go there.
We're not going to go there. I don't want to know about that, man. I don't want to know about those random carnival rides.
I think it's that deep, husky radio man voice that gets me every time.
Why, thank you. Oh, and actually, speaking of the radio, before we completely wrap things up here, those of you who live in New Hampshire, those of you who listened to last episode heard my comic book piece that I did on the air here, well, New Hampshire Public Radio has picked up my comic book piece, and they're actually going to be airing it on their air sometime soon. I don't know the specific date as of yet. Once I do, I'll make sure to let you guys know, but I'll be heard on New Hampshire Public Radio, which is certainly a nice thing. So any of you who like that piece, you can listen to it again on there or not. It's up to you. But nevertheless, I'm a happy man that I finally can be heard outside of just the internet and on iPods. I'm on the radio, baby. Hell yeah.
Congratulations on that, man.
Thanks a lot, man. It was a major shock for me, because I did this a year ago, and all of a sudden I just randomly get the email, and I'm like, okay, that works. But yeah, so I'll be on New Hampshire Radio soon. But nevertheless, let's wrap things up here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys. I thank them for that. I will be at Baltimore Comic Con this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. I'll probably be hanging around the Comic Geek Speak guys a little bit, and you'll be able to see me around the floor as well. So if you know what I look like, and if you don't, well, then you'll be able to hear this masculine voice, and that'll probably be able to point it out. But nevertheless, if I see you guys over at Baltimore Comic Con, make sure to say hello, and I will certainly be happy to say hello to you as well. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. There is a new Comic Timing listing on Podcast Alley. It's the one that says, note, this is the right listing, because the last listing had the old feed, and I wasn't going to wait forever to Podcast Alley to change that. So please vote on the second listing that says Comic Timing Podcast, not just Comic Timing. And we're up and running on iTunes again, which is certainly a plus. So once again, Chris, Matt, thank you very much for joining us on this very happy episode about continuity. And we'll make sure to remember you in the continuity of Comic Timing.
Thank you much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hell yeah. And Matt, talk to you next week.
All right, I am the retcon of comic timing.
Yes, you are, actually, because you have replaced, well, not replaced, you have filled in for David Price in that role of sidekick, and you've been doing a damn good job ever since. So good job, Robin.
Sidekick?
Don't roll out the green shorts, please, guys.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to see your reaction, man.
I love wearing booties as much as the next guy.
Oh, dear God, now I'll never get that image out of my head. No, you are certainly a partner on this show more than the sidekick, and I thank
Let's retroactively change our continuity. So, as of now, David Price has never existed.
Who is David Price? And check out David Price and the Bullpen Boldens podcast, by the way. That's at bullpenboldenpodcast.com. Episode 1 is out, and it had a guest appearance from me and from Matt, but episode 2 will have an interesting appearance, too. Can't wait for that. And as always, there's always time for comics.
Well, if I can't get any podcast pussy, then I'm...
There we go. There's our blooper. Hell yeah.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
That's at the end of the episode, right?
You better not.